Hadi bakalım.
The deep state can't catch a break, and we are so here for it. As The Guardian puts it, the White House is stunned as Hegseth inquiry brings up illegal wiretap claim.
And quite a claim it is, David.
Oh, man, it is a story, and I'm so here for it because we covered it 10 episodes ago. We're coming back around to it, and it's showing our predictions are true. This looks like ideological witch hunt, purging out the skeptics. Yeah.
Yes. And we thank you for joining us. We hope you're having an amazing day. Welcome back to another incredible episode of Human Reaction. You are the reason we're all here. We appreciate you very, very much. We couldn't do it without you. And, you know, I think I speak for everybody within the Human Reaction organization when I say that, you know, it's stories like this that that make us feel like, you know, this is a show you can trust. Like, we're going to follow through on these stories. We're going to show you and tell you what we think you need to know. We're going to do it as honestly as we possibly can. So we appreciate you for tuning in. Please smash the like button if you have not yet. And first person to leave a comment gets a digital high five from me. Crisp, crisp high five.
I don't have a sound effect for that. Damn it.
Well, we'll work on that.
Yeah. All right,
good. That'll work in the meantime.
Yeah, and so the Qatari checks are in the mail, so all those comments really make a big difference. And if you can, go to humanreactionpod.com to become a member?
You could become the mayor of Human Reaction.
The mayor of the Discord. Come to the Discord and become the mayor. We'll vote you in. All right, ready to go?
This is, yeah, we believe in democracy in the Discord, apparently. this is news to me, but apparently it's true. All right, let's get into it. So what is going on with the follow-up to the Pete Hegseth Pentagon issue? Maybe for the sake of viewers who might not have caught that episode or who have forgotten about it, what were the initial conditions regarding that? What are we going back to?
Yeah, so three staffers, all who served on the interim, and the kind of the interim's not the right word, the transition team were brought into the Pentagon under Pete Hegseth, one of them being Dan Caldwell. The three of them were fired. They're all non-establishment figures. Not all of them were huge on, you know, realism and restraint, a more restrained and less imperialistic and aggressive foreign policy. Especially Dan Caldwell is well known and has been very out about his skepticism of the terror wars and its results and the strategic positioning the United States has put itself in since 2001. Those three guys were fired very strangely, just kind of let go, said that they had leaked something. They denied it. And then Dan Caldwell goes on Tucker Carlson. That blows up, gets really big. And of course, we covered it when the news dropped. I was shocked because Dan Caldwell, someone I've worked with before, I know the guy. And it was, you know, it looked bad, but there wasn't any evidence.
Right. And it came out that they had not confiscated his personal cell phone to do any searches of it to see if, you know, this alleged leak was even on there, right?
Because they didn't need to, because apparently it was warrantlessly wiretapped, illegally wiretapped.
Warrantlessly wiretapped. So let's just back up here. One major question. Does that mean that they have substantiated that there was, in fact, a leak?
Well, There appears to be a leak of some kind. It's an investigation to find out where the leak came from. So this will be a little bit clearer if we get into the timeline.
Sure.
And then we can return to like the bigger picture.
Okay.
And that might kind of clear it all up.
Okay.
So, okay. Pentagon's firing happened. Age issue joined statement saying this is not a thing. We didn't do anything wrong. White House. So the DOD and the White House are two separate organizations, although one is supposed to report to the other, supposedly.
The DOD being the one reporting to the White House.
Yeah, of supposedly. Right?
Allegedly. <That's>
allegedly. when that happens, Caldwell, the White House gets the information after it's already happened. And then, you know, claiming, quote, there's evidence that Caldwell had printed a document. And we didn't know this when we covered it last time. So this is new news, right?
Yeah.
What was the leak? We didn't know. It was like, what was the leak? We didn't see any leaks. It wasn't the New York Times leak. You know, we made that clear because we know what happened there. And it was, there was no motive there. There was a completely unclear motive. So what The Guardian claims is, quote, there is evidence that Caldwell had printed a document on U.S. military plans for the Panama Canal, classified at top secret level, took a photo, and then sent it to a reporter using his personal phone. So if it was his personal phone, why didn't they confiscate it?
Right.
Isn't that weird?
Why didn't they confiscate it?
Well, Caldwell then appears on Tucker, right? Then they hear them being the White House, specifically what it appears to be is the Vance staff, or at least the Vance faction of the White House.
Interesting to hear that there are factions in the White House, but I guess that makes sense.
I think there are factions in every White House, but I think these are far starker because of the anti-establishment side and the entrenchment of the deep state, right?
Right. You've got the insurgent, sort of like America First MAGA wing that's doing battle with the deep state wing, if you will.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. In fact, what Hegseth is trying to do and Vance is trying to, they're all trying to do this. The question is who's doing well at it? And it looks like maybe Hegseth not so well. Maybe sure. The takeaway here. So they hear that a rumor from the Pentagon that the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, which is called OSI, they had been working the case for weeks at that point, before Caldwell had even been fired. They had identified that the leaked document, by the evidence of what they knew was leaked, that it was a draft document. Okay. And not the final plan.
Okay.
They had therefore been investigating mid-level staffers who were more likely to actually have possession of that document, who worked at the U.S. Southern Command. Makes sense, because mm-hmm. this is a plan for South America.
Yes.
Central Command, or the Joint Chiefs of Staff, all who would have a role to play in that document. They weren't looking there at all.
Huh.
It was then, after the firings, they are then told to go investigate Caldwell and the other two. Right.
Okay. Okay. So you're doing a great job with the stream.
I'm trying.
I really like it. So Dan Caldwell wasn't or wouldn't have been directly involved with this plan per se, right? Is that what you're trying to say there?
Well, that's what's so strange about it is the people investigating him didn't do the warrantless wiretap that was then later accused. So the White House then at that point, you know, presses Palator, who is the guy in charge of the investigation, who is Hegseth's personal lawyer.
Okay.
Which is interesting because he's both like a freelancer for the U.S. government providing defense consulting or defense, attorney services.
Sure.
To people who are accused of things like war crimes or sexual assault or something like that. He's defending people in military court. That's his specialty.
Okay.
And we'll return to him later with a deeper dive on who he is. It presses him to then reveal his hand, which is an unconstitutional wiretap of Caldwell's phone, which he now denies. So at first he said, this is the rumor going around. It appears that he said this, but listen, now this is the Guardian reporting it based upon four anonymous sources that they do not cite.
Okay.
So you got to take it with a grain of salt, but also it isn't exactly like they have a huge incentive here other than the incentive that people would normally cite, like, The liberals want to embarrass the Trump administration, so they're making this a story.
Yeah.
But also, the Guardian tends to be a little bit more neoliberal, right?
Sure.
They don't tend to have this, like, we want to undermine the prosecution of the realist camp out of the Trump administration.
Right.
That's a terrible motive. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Can I just make sure I'm tracking this timeline?
Yeah.
So document gets leaked to the press, a draft document about the Panama Canal.
Yes.
And the Air Force Office of Special Investigations begins investigating this leak.
Mm-hmm.
Within these various compartments of the Department of Defense that would have had access to that, right? Mm-hmm. The Joint Chiefs, SOCOM, CENTCOM.
Importantly, the draft document.
The draft document.
Not the final.
But not Dan Caldwell. They only start investigating Dan Caldwell after he's fired and they are told to investigate him in connection to this leak.
Yes.
And in the process of doing that investigation, they did not confiscate his personal phone, which was supposedly used to take the photo of this document and give it to the press.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow also in the course of this investigation, it comes out that they used an illegal wiretap of Dan Caldwell's phone to somehow acquire this evidence that he did commit the leak.
According to the lawyer who is investigating this for the Pentagon.
Okay.
Not the OSI. So there was two investigations.
According to the lawyer who is somehow simultaneously Pete Hegseth's personal attorney and also a contractor for the Pentagon.
Yes.
Okay. So to me, it seems like there's a conflict of interest there. I'm no legal expert, but that doesn't seem like a thing that should exist.
Yep. That has been covered, but it's been it's like a page C of the newspaper type of coverage.
And okay.
I have some sources for that and kind of what the concerns
are. Okay, cool. I think I get it. Hopefully everybody gets it at home. If anything's unclear, drop us a comment. We'll clarify, but I think we're there.
So the question is motive. Why do this? And for that, you have to look to Joe Casper.
Who is Joe Casper?
He is the former chief of staff for Hegseth. He was fired in April. He resigned and is now that like special status that Elon is, where he works like 120 days.
Special government employee.
Yeah. He's in that status now.
Okay.
So he wasn't fired, but he also, So problem, right? He doesn't even have a new chief of staff. So Diane Caldwell was kind of filling in that role a little bit before he got canned.
Sure.
So what's going on here?
Interesting. It seems like they're, well, who fired Joe Casper?
Well, once again, it wasn't fired. He was just resigned.
Okay, fair.
Exactly.
So, but what it seems like, the pattern I'm detecting in what you're laying out here is that the person who should be closest to Pete Hegseth is slowly being picked off time and time
again. That's another read here. And that's the factionalization of the moment. And this probably happens everywhere, except for when you have an establishment agreed upon where everyone already agrees, right? This is because of the fly in the ointment, the realist being in the camp, Hegseth being probably not the most ideological realist of the group. So Casper, the reason why he was let go, which is maybe the way I can get to answering your question, his tenure was marred by a bunch of allegations of unprofessional conduct, like dirty jokes sort of thing, inappropriate comments, stuff like that. And then his inability to actually organize the office and like get things like moving onto a track.
Sure.
He stepped down in April, transitioned part time. So multiple sources connected, suggest that he was a close personal connection to, Parlator.
Who is the attorney?
The attorney.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Casper is the one who appointed Parlator to investigate it.
Instead
of just letting OSI do the work,
okay,
he appoints a special guy in charge of it. So that's also interesting.
Okay, so now I'm seeing guy let go, guy resigns, quote unquote, guy is bitter, mm-hmm. right? Joe Casper is perhaps unpleased with being made to resign or resigning, and so he brings in an investigator specifically, perhaps to come up with an outcome that he wants?
Maybe.
Okay.
That's the question. So who is Joe Casper then?
Yes.
His background was he was the chief of staff to Representative Duncan Hunter out of California. Now, a little sidebar, because it's just interesting. Duncan Hunter was a congressman till 2020, from 2008 to 2020.
Okay.
That does tell you something about him. One thing to note about how the Hill works. Staff are ideological and they will sometimes not share a complete ideology with their boss. But over time, you see this like convergence over time of where it just gels together and people tend not to disagree so much in offices. The longer serving a boss, the more that is true. He also served Duncan Hunter's father, Duncan Hunter Sr., and Duncan Hunter Jr. Duncan Hunter Sr. went from 1981 to 2009. There's also a phenomenon in Congress where the cohort that you come in with often determines a lot about you.
Interesting.
Right. So the Republicans who come into office from 2000 to 2008 are way different than all the Republicans coming from 2010 to 2016.
They're probably more Bush era Republicans.
Yes. Right. Yes. And it's a stereotype. It's not universally true, but it's a pretty goddamn good lens.
I mean, like, that makes sense because it's the ideological motivator for you to enter public office in the first place, right?
That's right. Yeah. So what's going on at the time will determine a lot of your outlook, and especially the first couple votes you take and the first kind of dialogue you take is going to set the tone for the rest of your time. Sure. Oftentimes.
Sure.
There is evolution and people do change their minds, but that's the exception to the rule. So But Duncan Hunter's no longer in that office. So continued sidebar a little bit for him. In January 13th, 2020, he is pled guilty to felony charges of conspiracy to misuse campaign funds.
Oh.
The resignation followed a lengthy investigation and indictment in 2018, which revealed that Hunter and his wife, Margaret, had legally spent $250,000 on campaign funds, personal expenses, vacations, meals, and school tuition.
Oh, boy.
Hunter was sentenced to 11 months in prison and 3 years of supervised probation. But in December 2020, right before Donald Trump leaves office, he pardons him.
Donald Trump pardoned Duncan Hunter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who was, just to, you know, circle this back around, who Joe Casper was working for?
Yeah. So he kind of come up through Duncan Hunter Sr. The era we're talking, huge Iraq war supporter, Patriot Act signer, blah, 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 blah. He's that guy from California, right?
Sure.
I think it's probably, people are saying like he's a neocon. That's not quite right. I think it's more like he's the kind of low rent hawk that neocons rely on as foot soldiers. Does sure. that make sense? They yes. just believe the talking points and go along with
sure.
it.
So again, just to kind of tie this thread in. So you're saying that because the ideology of your boss or the era in which you come into politics defines a little bit more about your ideology, perhaps Joe Casper was probably aligned with Duncan Hunter in being more hawkish.
Yes. Okay. Probably.
Yep. Okay.
He then goes to work with a group called Irving Graves Strategy Group for a little while. This is the Casper.
Mm-hmm.
Before jumping on to the Trump administration.
Okay.
That's his story. And so Irving Casper just does, you know, high level lobbying in DC.
Perfect. That's what I was going
to say. I looked for FAR registration, couldn't find any.
Okay.
So, yep.
So they're domestic.
They seem to specialize in domestic, but okay. you know, I didn't have that much time. So if you become a member someday, maybe I will have more time to do more original.
Oh, what a great pitch. Become a member. So David has all the time to do all the digging, all this. Super gay to become a member if you're into that sort of thing.
We welcome the gays. So
we do.
Steven Feinberg is the next we gotta go Tim Pollentore next. So he's Hegseth's lawyer, right? We had this story from Politico, which was interesting. Hegseth attorney dual roles trip conflict of interest alarms.
Okay, so it's not just me.
Yeah, it's not just you. It just wasn't really well covered. But yeah, I mean, he's you know, he was a former Navy officer. He gets out of the Navy. He gets his law degree. He starts Pallator Law Group. He represents Hegseth specifically in several legal matters, including defending him against sexual misconduct allegations during his confirmation process for Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. I'm also noting from this article here, I'm reading, Parlatori was also reportedly in the Signal Group with Hegseth's wife and brother, in which the defense secretary shared details of a strike on Yemen.
Correct. So he's part of that Signal Gate 2. The sequel is not nearly as good as the original.
Right.
It's just like...
Signal Gate 1 with Vance and Mike Waltz and the journalist.
Right.
I forget his name, but yes. Okay, this is Signal Gate 2. Sure. Yep. Okay.
We didn't even cover it because it just wasn't.
Meanwhile, like but, Pete, yeah. like my brother in Christ, don't be sharing battle plans on Signal, bro. If you didn't learn that the first time, maybe the second.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he's just an oversharer. Like he's just talking to his wife and just like, hey, you know, I got this all this stuff going on in Yemen. We got blah 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 blah.
Just full on TMI. Can you imagine his home life? You know? Can you imagine?
Like, right.
Anyway.
So. You could see where he's a lobbyist at the same time that Casper is working for Duncan Hunter on the Hill.
Parlatori is a lobbyist at the same time as Duncan
Hunter. He's a lobbyist and they're both running around the same DC circles.
Gotcha.
While he's a lobbyist at the same time.
Gotcha.
And then also a congressional staffer. And on top of that, these guys, Hunter was part of the Armed Services Committee. They're the ones who handle a lot of the kind of legal procedures around things like military law and military court law, something that Pallator is already part of.
Yes.
Pallator? Isn't that his name?
Parlatori.
Parlatori.
Italian.
Parlatori.
Parlatori.
All right. I just got to get anyway. You to teach me how to pronounce names.
We just need to put
I'll
them
do
on
American names.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. So there's the connections of them being connected together isn't a lock and shut case. It's not a smoking gun. But it's real, right? I mean, he appointed him. This guy's there partially because he's Pete Hegseth's lawyer, but also he's getting these contracts, these deals with the government. I mean, geez, guys.
He's got like, insider vibes to me.
This is an incestuous group, but this is what happens in politics. People join together. They form coalitions. This just happens naturally in staff.
I mean, kind of human nature, effectively, right?
100%, yeah. So it's the question is, what's the connective tissue there? And we just don't have that yet, right? What we have is these threads. And so we predicted in episode 148 that this was a political prosecution. Like, I just agreed with Tucker on that. It just didn't smell right.
Right.
It didn't fit the motive of Dan Caldwell. Now, does the motive fit on this one? Can Dan Caldwell care about military plans for Panama Canal?
I mean, given his Tucker interview, which we've both watched, he seemed... as a, you know, a military veteran, like way more concerned with interventionist, you know, foreign policy as opposed to like the Panama Canal and trade. And
yeah.
I mean, say he doesn't care about that.
Don't get me wrong. It's just a tenuous case, right? Because you're saying, I'm not saying you're saying this, but like the opposition has to say he was worried about a contingency plan so much he risked his entire career on it.
Right.
When he's as close to power as you can get to influencing the most important people in the world when it comes to the issue you care about the most, which is preventing another war in the Middle East.
Exactly.
When Iran is like right there constantly in our face.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When there's so much going on there, and he's just like, eh, I really care about what this reporter thinks of me. I'm going to set up a battle plan for the Panama Canal. Well, it's not even a
battle plan, is it?
You know, that's what it appears to be, right? Oh, it's okay. Like a military plan for that. So right. In the event where we needed to control the Panama Canal.
Oh, I see. Okay.
What would we do? Who gives a shit about that? Like, that's not going to happen. Like, no one cares. Like, why? It doesn't make any sense. If you know anything about what Dan Caldwell has written, believes, talks about.
Yes.
Right? Especially in comparison to the risk profile, the thing that was done.
Right. The risk reward here is way off balance.
You have to believe he's a complete idiot. Yeah. And that's hard to believe. Read his writings. He's not an idiot.
Well, and you don't get to that position. Well, I can't say that for everyone, but it doesn't seem like he would have gotten to that position while also being an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So this yep. reeks a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got a lot of well-connected insiders who have generally hawkish worldviews, one of whom was let go, an attorney who has a conflict of interest, who is associated with, perhaps close with, the guy who was let go, mm-hmm. and then Dan Caldwell, who has contrary foreign policy views, who is close to Pete Hegseth, and whom they perhaps want to separate from Pete Hegseth. What would the motivation be to separate Dan Caldwell from Pete Hegseth, to strip away the non-interventionist voice?
Well, exactly. It's because you have... Okay, so Hegseth is a little bit more of a face than he is an ideologue. Dan Caldwell is an ideologue.
Right.
He's a good communicator, but he doesn't give a shit about, you know, how popular he is.
Right.
Right. He doesn't want to be on TV except for to advance his ideas.
Right.
So, while Hegseth is more like wants to be liked, right. He's that sure. guy. Right. He writes books and he's like, he's on Fox News.
He's a TV personality. Right? Yeah.
So he's evolved on foreign policy over time, like many veterans have. And I have total grace for that. I totally understand that I've seen it happen in real time, like veterans dealing with what they had to do and how they were lied to. And I'm totally sympathetic to that. You know, but some people will, when they're kind of faced with that, they'll kind of make subtle changes, you know what I mean? And they're not going to like read shit about it. But Dan Caldwell, he's the guy who read stuff about it and then got like his arms around it as an ideological cause that he then dedicates his life to. While Pete Hegseth is more like, you know, it was a bad idea. A lot of bad ideas happened. You know, we could do better. We're going to do better.
Yeah.
One part about this too, and I want to mention this because I think it's important. Just popped in my brain right now, is the whole like Hegseth warrior ethos thing. That has a lot to do with the rules of engagement and the way that we deal with soldiers who bend, if not break, the rules of engagement as a more legalistic process. And that is in Hegseth's view and in Parlatore.
Nailed it.
Parlatore.
Yep.
Yeah. In his view, kind of align on that, right? Because he's defending a lot of these soldiers as they're going through military court, as they should get representation. And Hegseth is saying, like, this is really undermining our warfighting ability, right? And those, I think there's a worthy dialogue there. I personally like relatively high standards for how our soldiers behave.
Certainly.
But you could also see a lot, you know, like you also need to have some grace with the terrible situation we're putting these human beings into. If you're just throwing the book at every time something steps out of line, you know, but it depends on like how brutal we're talking about here. Are we talking about shooting unarmed civilians? Are we talking about like a reasonable suspicion that person was there to do harm, right? Like, what are we talking about here? It really depends on the details. So they're making an aggregate calculation that we're gone too far this direction. Fine. So that's where they're kind of aligned. They're not necessarily, and there's no reason to believe that they're aligned on foreign policy or other things that actually matter at the DOD to the same degree, right? Whether or not we go to war with Russia is way more important. I'm sorry. I know veterans. I'm sorry. I get it. There's maybe reforms that need to be made in that area, but it's not as important as war with Iran or Russia.
Yeah.
Right. So you might be losing the ball a little bit if you're closer with your personal lawyer who agrees with you on that than Dan Caldwell, who's actually, you know, trying to save the country from bankruptcy and, you know, more murder and death.
Right.
Light criticism there.
Sure.
The reason I was going on that is because that alignment is something I think is important for the dynamic of the DOD, but this other thing is far more important. So what Hegseth can do now and is doing now is basically delegated this all to a guy named Steven Feinberg, who is the Deputy Secretary of State. I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't know what this guy knows about anything as far as foreign policy goes. All right. So Steven Feinberg, he's the co-founder and former CEO of Cerberus Capital Management, a private equity firm worth approximately $65 billion in assets across various industries, including significant investments in defense contractors.
Oh.
Yeah. Quite a bit. There's been a bit of ink spilt on this one, too. Specifically, you know, in the fact that he was a donor in 2016 and 2020. He previously served on the chair of the president's intelligence advisory board from 2018 to 2021 during the first Trump administration. And, you know, I think this is... It's hard to get a pierce into what people's foreign policy beliefs are when they're regular people, the public, and especially if you're like a wealthy person who really values privacy. And that appears to be what Steven Feinberg is about. But we do have is they issue questionnaires when you're getting Senate confirmed. And here's some answers to some Senate confirmation questions. In your opinion, what are the key U.S. national interests in the Middle East? Please explain your answer. Like how it reads like an essay question.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In my opinion, the key U.S. national security interests in the Middle East are, one, preventing, deterring, and disrupting credible terrorist threats to the U.S. homeland. Two, ensuring the free flow of goods and trade. Three, acting as a security enabler and integrator for our partners and allies. Four, preventing Iran from attaining a nuclear weapon. Five, ensuring the defense of Israel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that gets you a little suggestion there. Okay, well, that could be a guy getting a job. Trying to get Senate to confirm him.
Yep.
You know, or
those could be his actual beliefs.
Yeah. That could be actually what he thinks. And and I'm not seeing realism restraint here. I'm not saying that therefore this guy is going to, you know, not do the investigation right. I'm just saying a bit of a black pill because he's not exactly aligned with the realist camp here.
Right.
And would he rather, you know, just leave off? Is, you know, it's a black pill, right? It's realism about human nature that if you're part of a tribe, you're more likely to seek confirmation bias for the thing you already want to be true rather than taking a guy who maybe you might see as an ideological enemy and exonerating him.
Right.
But maybe he's a really great guy who's going to do that. I don't know. I don't know what his qualifications are to run the Defense Department. He did serve in the military, but he's not exactly a policy thinker, right? And a strategic thinker that I could tell. I mean, he's done no writing on it. He's done no things about it other than donate money and own a private military contracting company.
Sure.
Yeah.
A very large one.
Yeah. So, and then the next question is, what are your assessment of the current military threat posed by Iran? Now, the right answer to this is none. They don't have intercontinental ballistic missiles. They're not a threat to us. Now, of course, in DC talk, that means to do anything we don't like. That doesn't actually mean us because that's how they define it. So he answers it like this. Iran poses a significant threat to the security of the United States and its allies and partners. Last year, Iran launched two major missile and drone strikes from Israel against Israel from Iranian territory. No mention of Israel's attack on them. In addition to Iran's conventional military, Tehran also leverages proxy forces to launch kinetic attacks and advance their interests across the Middle East, referring to Hezbollah. These forces threaten both U.S. forces as well as those of our partners. That's because we're there. We don't need to be. sorry, I lost my place because I didn't. Iran also continues to inch closer to gaining nuclear weapons capability and has been for 20 years, 40 years. What are you talking about? This is unacceptable. Iran acquisition of nuclear weapons would threaten U.S. interests and partner security, provide Iran a shield behind which they can engage in more aggressive proxy activities and increase the risk of nuclear accidents or miscalculation. He's kind of right about the last part. So, is he more likely to, you know, go with the flow, with the current momentum? Because now Don Cole is all the way out, and the other guy is a part-time guy, still around. Parlatore. He's still around.
He is.
And then, you know, the guy owns DynCorp, and that's a large military private military contracting group,
right?
Similar in size to Blackwater. So
right. So what we're seeing here is a guy appointed to this to do this investigation, who owns a private equity firm worth $65 billion, who has significant holdings in defense contractors, mm-hmm. so who has a personally vested interest in the continuation of the military-industrial complex and the American empire abroad, particularly, you know, in war zones, right? So I'm seeing, again, a very significant conflict of interest here.
Potentially, yeah. He might be straight up legitimately, like, totally aligned with America First, and we just don't know, because he couldn't say it on the Senate thing, and he's never said anything in public about it.
Fair.
But if you're betting the odds, I think you're betting against the house if you're betting that he's going to be straight up with us.
Yes, I think so.
You know.
So question about Dan Caldwell here. So we go back to what we know about the evidence they have against him, which is none as far as I can tell, other than something was leaked and it was an illegal wiretap that accumulated that mm-hmm. evidence.
Supposedly. Like,
but they haven't confiscated his phone,
yeah.
so they don't know for sure that there's any evidence on there that he actually did this.
Yes.
So Dan Caldwell is now under investigation and going to be run through this ringer on the suspicion of having actually leaked this information.
Well, yeah. Other than that, it's inadmissible. Obviously, you can't put it into court. Will we wiretapped his phone with the NSA?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So without any actual real evidence and with only inadmissible illegal wiretap evidence,
yeah.
quote unquote.
Yeah.
Is he at risk here?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, it seems more likely what they do is they just kind of, they already won. They already right. got the three guys out. So now they just kind of like,
they do the show court thing
yeah,
and it peters kinda, out of the news cycle
yeah.
and then they move on and someone replaces him and he gets forgotten.
Yeah. I mean, in the meantime, Hegseth has not much leadership underneath him. Hopefully they can do something there, but it's not going to be great for operations at the DOD. It's a real bummer for the ambitions I think so many people voted for Trump for, which was to actually align our military and our foreign policy with our national interest.
Right.
America First. It's such a miss.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But this is a perfect example of the deep state antibodies mm-hmm. attacking this foreign object, which is America First.
That's right.
Right? I mean, we knew, I think, whether or not we wanted to admit it in the... you know, the endless winning that was the first 100 days, that the system would fight back against the interests of a non-interventionist foreign policy and all the other things that go against the establishment. And so this is an example of that happening in real time.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's just, it's such a small ask too. It's like, we're asking for non-interventionist, but what they're asking for is, let's just not go to war with Iran. We can do everything else.
Right.
You know, bases all over the place. Keep that, up that defense budget to $1 trillion. Don't care.
Right.
Just don't go to war with Iran. Don't go to war with Russia. Don't go to war with China or North Korea.
And the establishment's like, nah.
I can't do that. Best I can do is you're fired.
Best I can do is. Meme of the week right there. We just made it.
Yeah. All right. So we got one other story because we got a little bonus time here. And I wanted to get into this because we missed it last week just due to the sheer insanity of the news cycle. This is a bit sad. And it's a real bummer. I like in the first story that the bad guys kind of got caught with their britches down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, illegal wiretap. This guy, you know, who looks very deep state-ish, kind of getting outed in the press. Just want to cover this story about the two Israelis who were shot in DC last week. I want to get into I'll go through the details first, and I'll just list them out, and then we can, you know, do a little interpretation. And I want to get into what the media, what people in the media have been saying about it, because it's so embodies some of the things we've been saying for a while now about principle-based thinking and other kinds of thinking and like kind of tribal thinking and how it plays out with this kind of like tragedy.
Sure.
So May 21st at 9 p.m. outside the Capitol Jewish Museum in Washington, D.C., Yaron Lishinsky, who's 30, Israeli, embassy political department, and Sarah Lynn Milgram, who's 26, was an American, and embassy public diplomacy, were shot. They were both shot and killed after leaving the American Jewish Committee, quote, young diplomats reception. It does appear that the shooter was targeting the reception, not necessarily them. We don't have any like personal connections between the shooter and those people, or really any reason why these individuals themselves were targeted. The guy whose name is Elias Rodriguez, 31 years old from Chicago. Authorities believe that Rodriguez targeted the, quote, young Democrats reception hosted by the American Jewish community at the Capitol Jewish Museum, not for specific individuals, but for the event. But ironically, the event, the event focused on humanitarian diplomacy and aid delivery in the Middle East, including Gaza, but other places too. I assume Yemen was part of that conversation as well, maybe Syria. So who's this guy, Elias Rodriguez? Rodriguez had a history of left-wing activism, including a brief affiliation with the Party of Socialism and Liberation, that's a PSL, in 2017. So it's quite some time ago, during which he protested police violence and Chicago's bid for Amazon headquarters. His fury intensified after the October 2023 Israel-Hamas war began, particularly following the killing of 2023 of Wadia al-Fuami.
Close enough.
Yeah. And we actually covered this. We covered it alongside another story at the time. A six-year-old Palestinian American boy murdered in a hate crime in Plainsfield, Illinois. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
Yeah. A sign demanding justice for Wadia was displayed in Rodriguez's apartment window. He also admired Aaron Brushnell, a U.S. airman who self-immolated in 2024 to protest the Gaza conflict, calling him a martyr. A lot, and one of the things that I want to establish too is it doesn't appear that this guy was Muslim, right? Yeah, okay. He appears to be a secularist. In 2022, so not long ago, he published an article in Free Thought Today by the Freedom from Religion Foundation, particularly concerned about the rise of Christian nationalism as one of the biggest threats of our civil liberties. And that in that he articulates, you know, agnostic if not atheist sentiments.
Sure.
He had a legally purchased handgun. He allegedly shot the victims in the back, reloaded, and shot Milgren again as she crawled away. 21 shots reported in the thing. So he shot, reloaded, shot, probably with a 9-round magazine or something like that. 11-shot magazine. Yeah. He entered the museum, was detained by security, shouted Free Palestine, and told police. Now, this isn't a mass shooting event per se, right? Because he wasn't shooting just randomly into a crowd. He wasn't trying to kill as many people as possible. He just killed these two people and really could have turned that on other people probably, but did not. He told police, I did it for Palestine. I did it for Gaza. He was charged on 2 counts of first-degree murder, murder of foreign officials, causing the death of the firearm, discharging a firearm during a crime of violence, which is death penalty eligible. The investigation will be led by the FBI and D.C. Metropolitan Police, probing as possible hate crime and terrorism. Rodriguez believed to have acted alone, not on watch list. There were some rumors that he had accomplices. I haven't seen any evidence of that. Laura Loomer speculated on that, but like, eh. Yeah. Targeted the event, but not specific individuals again. He did have a manifesto that I read called Escalate for Gaza, Bring the War Home. It's basically, and it reads relatively well. Like, he's not a dummy. It reads as an articulation of why you need to go to violence in order to wake people up, in order to make change happen. And people aren't doing anything. Don't American public don't care about what's happening in Gaza. And therefore, he's going to do this thing in order to wake people up. Which, if I'm to be absolutely clear about this, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen to anyone who's skeptical of Israel at all. All you've done is make this worse for them.
Right.
Because now you've given it these people who every time there's a shooting out of what sort, there's a whole bunch of people who jump on top of those bodies to say, this fits my political ideology and why my political ideology was always right. And that's just gross.
It is.
But it does work, right? It gets a lot of attention. And they feel righteous when they do it, right? So, this is a giant L for the people who are compassionate and concerned about what's going on in Gaza, right? Because now there's just a giant barrier that is that you, anytime you say anything about Israel, you are reinforcing this action,
right?
or have to defend this action, which of course is indefensible.
Right.
Two young people, like serving in low-level positions in an embassy, of course that's ridiculous.
Well, not to mention the fact that the whole event was surrounding sending humanitarian aid to the area.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I mean, like the young man, I'm sorry.
Elias Rodriguez.
Yeah. No. The victim.
Israeli.
Yeah. Well, he's actually German Israeli.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Yaron Lischinsky.
Yeah. Yaron. He was more hawkish individual by his ex profile. I saw some of the stuff on there, and you know, he's definitely, you know, Israeli, right? I mean, like, he's definitely on Israel's side here, which is understandable. And a Netanyahu supporter, but also a bit of a Trump supporter. He celebrated the peace deal with Trump, and celebrated hostages coming home and things like that, and the American hostage and things like that. But you're still left with like this, even it, like you're killing him for his ideas, right? He's not an IDF soldier on the ground or pressing buttons to blow up children here, right, buddy? You know, like, you're just killing a kid for having the wrong political opinions, being part of the wrong ethnicity,
right,
having the wrong job. And that's that ends justify the means calculation, mm-hmm, that can just lead you wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to avoid that kind of thinking. It is hubris to think that you understand that you have the capability in your mind to know that your ends justify your means.
Right.
No, you're a limited little human, little speck floating on the, you know, little ass end of the universe. You don't know shit. How could you know that the ends justify the means?
Right.
Maybe you can know if your action in the moment is moral or not. Maybe you can make your best guess at that. But god damn, do you think that you can just do this and it's going to cause the revolution that you want? In fact, it's going to do exactly the opposite. It's going to galvanize people against you, against the philosophy he supposedly believed, assuming he actually did. I mean, this guy could exactly be the kind of dark triad that Jordan Peterson's talking about.
It's possible.
Latch onto a thing to cause meaning in his life because he has no meaning innately, because he doesn't have any belief structure other than the dogma that he's been given.
Right.
And then rides along it, and then he wants to be famous and shoot some people. You know, maybe that's the true motivation that lies underneath all the ideological facade. Maybe. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could totally see that people attach themselves to all sorts of movements for the purpose of finding a tribe. I think that's a fairly common thing in human nature. Mm-hmm. Sad that he went to these lengths to do something so atrocious and then also, of course, undermine the cause he supposedly supported in the first place.
100%. Yeah. And it's because of the undermining of the cause that I think we have an overreach from the left that suggests this was a false flag of some kind.
Hmm.
And I just see no evidence of that.
Yeah.
A lot of speculation in that direction.
A false flag in the sense that he was groomed in some way to do this, to try to undermine the Palestinian cause.
Provoked into it, double agent, could be a lot of different things, right? I mean, it's just all like, it's just too convenient. Well, I mean, sometimes your side takes a blow because you're not policing well, you know?
I mean... I would say it's not uncommon for the left to call for violence.
Yeah.
In these sorts of situations, in all sorts of situations, they do it all the time.
Yeah. And celebrate it. You know, I mean, even the people on the left, I appreciate the most, right? We'll do it. We'll be, or at least poo poo it. Luigi Mangione is being the best example. See that pronunciation?
Sure.
Did I nail that?
Did great.
Yeah, right there. So yeah, Mangione is a great example, right? Where you got people I legitimately admire being like
Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah. Being like, yeah, you know, he's cute and he's and you know, I don't agree with his methods, but hey, you know, a lot of people die from insurance companies. It's like, whoa, buddy, that's like, you're cutting that line close, dude. Like,
right,
this is not okay.
No.
You know, just because you disagree with healthcare policies in the United States, you know, they wouldn't treat it the way we're treating it right now, right? At least he didn't at some junctures, and that was very disappointing. So anyways, the other side of that is also gone, pardon my French, fucking nuts, just off their goddamn rocker. Barry Weiss had this lovely old tweet. Do you want to read it? I'm tired of reading.
I will read it. Venomous, untrue statements about Israel, its supporters, and the war against Hamas in Gaza have chipped away at the old taboo against open anti-Semitism in America. Constant demonization of American Jews and Zionists is how a democratic state and its supporters have been made into targets. It's how the, quote, permission structure for violence against Jews in America has been erected. Growing up, I learned about Simon of Trent and other medieval blood libels. I wondered how something so unnatural, so deranged, could ever happen. How lies could spread so far, transmogrify into a movement, infect culture so comprehensively, and engender deadly action. Those who participate in this culture of lies and who now want to distance themselves from yesterday's violence will insist that the alleged killer's acts do not represent them, that it harms their movement. But how can anyone honest with themselves not draw a connection between a culture that says Zionists are anti-humans, even Nazis themselves, and the terrorists now attacking Jews across the globe?
Yeah.
So basically, coming at you, David Rand,
yeah,
for saying I disagree with Israel's conduct in the war in Gaza, but I also condemn this violent act against two innocent people.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yeah, because if you do that, you're enabling the permission structure of all violence against Jews when Jews are not the same as the state of Israel. There are two different things. One's an ethnicity. Now, this is interesting, especially with Yaron, right? Because he's supposedly a Christian. He's a Christian, right? But he's Israeli and he's German.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, right? He has two nationalities. He has a religion. He has a probably biological and ethnic affinity with the Jews of Israel.
Right? Sure.
Because of, and that's pretty sensible, although we don't know everything about the kid. We have those senses of his background and his story. And of course, you know, like that doesn't connect, right? I mean, he didn't do this because they're Jews. He did this because they're Israelis. So why would it go to Jews? Well, that's the subtle game of play that these guys have been doing since October of last year, where they're creating the association that all Jews are Israel and Israel's all Jews, rather than one's a nation state and one's an ethnicity, which are two different terms that are separated. Why would we confuse these terms? Like sex and gender are kind of similar. Why would we confuse these terms? Why would we make them, why would we separate them, but also combine them and also like make them vague and hard to define when we, you know, we have these words for a reason. Ethnicity is a thing. It's a culture. It's a biological status, and it's norms and values and religion and all these, and languages and all these things built into one category.
Right.
And a nation state is a government.
Right.
And you can't be, and everyone seems so careful to me. All the critics seem so careful to me all the time to say, I'm talking about the nation state.
Right. Well, right? I think you draw a really interesting parallel there with the obfuscation of clarity of language around sex and gender by making them vague and opaque and really undefinite. You make it hard to argue against anything in it, right? You can't, right. It's like, you know, the point of attack is now a cloud as opposed to a definite object, and it, yes, makes it really hard to mount a coherent argument against it because the definitions keep changing. It's like whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps part of the motive here is to do the same thing, to make it difficult to criticize the actions of the state of Israel by trying to tie those people making that very specific claim to anti-Semitism. I mean, that seems, yeah, like what we've been experiencing.
Exactly. And the motive doesn't seem to be, if you read his manifesto, have anything to do with Jews. It has everything to do with Israel and the American people, even more so. He's like, he's more pissed off at us for not giving a shit and funding it. So like another parallel, like the BLM parallel here, that, you know, a cop shoots black man. It isn't about the cop or the black man or the circumstance. It's about systemic racism,
right? Right?
It's about racism being the true motive behind everything, regardless of the facts on the ground. And we keep going through this, and it just, justice is an individual concept. It's a concept that happens, that is in relationship to other people, but it's individualized. As soon as you aggregate it to justice is social,
mm-hmm,
all of a sudden you're now dealing with a vague, foggy concept where you're just kind of embedding your values into all the substructure of what you're arguing, rather than actually arguing the case that you're arguing at, right, hand, right? This individualized case with facts on the ground that can have a side that's prosecuting, a side that's defending. Now what we're debating is like your vague impressions that there's a lot of anti-Semitism going around. And don't get me wrong, I'm open to the fact that anti-Semitism has risen And I think that's because people are actually taking you at your word when you say all Jews are Israel and Jews are all, Israel is all Jews, right? If you make that vague and then people start believing you, that's kind of your fault, right? I mean, a little bit.
Well, yeah.
You have to have really some responsibility for creating the association, then people believe the association, which the association is ridiculous, right? Because there's plenty of Jews who are never, who are not on this, right? And we're not responsible for the state of Israel's army, of the IDF.
Right.
And that's ridiculous to hold them accountable to that. That's another collectivist error, right? So you're like, you're leading people into collectivist error rather than using clear language and separating these groups. You're leading them into the very thing that you built your career on criticizing.
I mean, that's a really interesting insight. And I had never really thought about it that way, that people are just taking them at their word and their word is associating the two. So of course you're going to see a rise in this kind of behavior and much, boy's wicked smart. And it's to all of our detriment, obviously, because we see a rise in chaos, and it makes you wonder, is that rise in chaos surrounding these issues intentional?
Yeah. Yeah. I think war benefits and states benefit that are being aggressive on the fog of it, right? And the fog of it in this case is, if you can't get true things out or clear things out, like, you have to operate in the vague of he said, she said, and I mean that in the case of Gaza, but in the American discourse, it's also true, right? Where if you can control the opposition by shaming them, you know, then you can win, right? Which is one of the things that they're doing here. They're trying to silence the opposition by making this case. But Martyr made a great response to this. He wrote, can someone explain to me how using the, quote, blood on your hands logic Zionists have employed since the recent double murder in Israeli diplomats, how Zionist dehumaning rhetoric is not responsible for this. And this is a Florida article of Jewish man mistakes two Israeli tourists for Palestinians and opens fire on them in Miami.
Hmm.
Yeah. Victims reportedly posted death to Arabs on social media after shooting while the suspect held on attempted murder charges.
Wow. Yeah. So
kind of confused by the subline there.
Well, it makes it seem like the victims of the shooting were not killed, but they were just shot at.
That's why it makes sense. A Jewish man, like a non-Israeli American, thought two Israeli tourists
were Palestinians,
and then shot at them, and then they, the Israelis who were shot at for being mistaken as Palestinians, said death to Arabs on social media. Wow. Wow. Another one, like, the whole motive of this thing from Elias was about the little Palestinian boy, right? Yeah. But that same week, there was another attack on a Jewish kid.
Right.
Remember?
Yep.
And we cover both of them. We're like, this is the worst thing that can happen. Let's not go this way, guys. Collectivism is bad.
Yes.
And they're just not getting it, you know, like.
No, they're definitely not getting it. And we're only going to see more of this, the more of it that happens, because there will be, you know, sympathetic outrage that this kind of thing occurred, and there'll be retaliation. I mean, this is a spiral, could turn into a spiral of a lot of destruction.
Yes.
Which is scary.
Yes. And that's the escalatory spiral that we wind up in if we take this road, the Barry Weiss road, especially, because it's only going to cause more resentment. And the more you say you criticize the state of Israel, you're an anti-Semite and you don't get to speak, or you should be shamed out of polite society, the more that people are going to lose it. Right. And we have this, and kudos to Charlie Kirk here. I'm not gonna read the whole thing, but basically he comes to Dave Smith's defense. Dave Smith put out a tweet saying, the murder of these two Israeli embassy staff members is a horrific tragedy. Anyone who thinks that this is standing up for the poor Palestinians is insane. You're actually spitting in their faces with an act like that. Senseless violence does nothing but escalate this very dangerous situation. But read the comments.
Let's see, what do we have? First up, shut up, Dave. You helped promote the same bullshit lies that this clown terrorist thought he was defending. From another one, it wasn't senseless violence. It was thought out, methodical, and encouraged by vile accounts like yours. You and your like-minded people spreading blood libels are responsible for this murder, Dave. Blood libels are always end in blood. Okay. Another one. He sat around and waited to be arrested on top of shouting "Free Palestine" so everyone could hear. This is obviously a false flag.
Yeah, that's from the other side.
Interesting. Save it, Smith. Your anti-Israel rhetoric has played a role in reaching this outcome.
This person has 127,000 followers. Now look, Palestinian News Network. These guys are pro-Palestine, big Israel skeptics.
Shut the fuck up, Dave.
It's like he literally gets it. And these comments are a lot. It blew up, and they're from both sides. And of course, a lot of these guys are all making and especially from the right, are making the case that of Barry Weiss, that it was his rhetoric that led to this, right? His rhetoric from, and I will quote this again. This is a David Rand quote from the Douglas Murray article questioning whether or not he was Jewish. Dave Smith, Jewy McJewface Smith. What? Dave Jewy McJewface Smith. So in the article, I forgot about this. So after the Joe Rogan debate,
yeah,
Douglas Murray wrote an article claiming Dave Smith, who claims Jewish ancestry. I was like, what are you talking about? This guy is, come on, man.
He is very Jewish.
You can't give him that. You can't just give them that. You can't just give them being Jewish. Anyways, so these guys are they're so over the skis. They're making this case that Dave Smith has encouraged this. And then Charlie Kirk comes in and he says, this is a tragedy. I get it. But you can't go around saying people have blood on their hands simply because they made tweets attacking Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli government, or the war in Gaza.
Yeah.
Charlie Kirk supports the war in Gaza. He has got questions, important questions, questions I'm glad he asked about it, but he's largely on that side. So, there are good forces here, but I worry that there's so much on the other side, because it's not just former leftists who are now influential on the right because they're gay and they don't like trans people, like Barry Weiss. It's also folks like Andrew Cuomo. And I want to respond to this.
Chris Cuomo?
Oh, Chris Cuomo, not Andrew Cuomo. Sorry, wrong Cuomo. Don't Cuomo-y on that.
I know a lot of you are going to get pissed off at me for what I say. First, remember, I signed up for that, okay? That's what Let's Get After It is all about. You want to fight? Let's fight. I'm here for it, okay? Because there is right and there is wrong. And you are missing what this embassy attack was. You think it's about others. It's about us on two levels. Who did it and who's going to be next? Okay? And we don't talk about this enough, and shame on me for feeding so much of the BS that we allow to distract ourselves. The latest terror murder is proof of everything we're really battling against, and I mean we. Okay? Not MAGA versus the left and how many seats they can get so they can get the money and pointing the fingers and prosecuting each other. That's all BS done to divide us for their advantage. Extreme Islamism. Not Muslims, not just Muslims, not just Islam, not just Islamism, but extreme Islamism. Okay? That is the wellspring of terrorism, and it is an underrated threat in America. 9/11 is too long ago, apparently, and we are paying more attention to the threat of trans athletes than of terrorists recruiting and radicalizing the most vulnerable population in America.
We're going to stop and play this because it's a little bit long, but first off, okay. Well, is it terrorism?
What Elias Rodriguez did?
Yeah, is it terrorism?
I mean, I'm not really sure how to define terrorism.
So terrorism is an attempt to cause an event to spark fear in an opposition to intimidate them.
In the effort to inspire a political change of some kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think this was terrorism technically, right? It doesn't inspire some fear. I agree. I mean, in fact, I think folks like Andrew Cuomo and Barry Weiss are helping him with that by blowing this up into an anti-Semitic pogrom that's happening all over the world, or some kind of conspiracy of that sort. That isn't what it appears to be to me, because that's in the motive of the act, right? A person goes into a mall, blows himself up to kill random people in order to spark fear and make you feel unsafe, everyone everywhere, that's an act of terrorism because that's his motive, right? It's like the difference between, manslaughter and murder, right? That's motive. Motive in manslaughter is like, I accidentally killed you. Sorry, buddy. Murder is I intentionally killed you, right? Right. I did something intentionally that result in your death. So is it terrorism? I wouldn't suggest it is. I think that's a really just either low IQ approach or just bad wordplay, murder, terror, or whatever he said. And is it Islamist? Because once again, the guy is pretty clearly agnostic and not Muslim. We have no evidence of him being a Muslim. So why would it be Muslim terrorism? And doesn't he sound like Dick Cheney right now to you? Is it just me? Like, I feel like, yeah, I got transported back in time to 2003 and Dick Cheney's on Fox News and I'm listening to it right now.
It is. It's interesting. It's very Bush era saber rattling against Islamic terrorism, which not necessarily something we've heard a lot of in the news cycle recently. And I mean, he points it out. 9/11 was too long ago, apparently.
Yeah.
Time to reignite this flame of fear against this particular group of people.
Exactly. And what's so weird is it's so loosely associated with it. The only thing that really has to do with it was on behalf of Palestinians who many are Muslim.
I might agree with the definition that it is terrorism, because if you take this definition, the use of violence or threat of violence, especially against civilians in the pursuit of political goals, it does kind of meet that. If, you know, his goal was to change American policy with this act, you know, I could see that.
Is that one of those definitions that have changed over time? That feels like it has.
Maybe.
Because I remember it being about causing fear, right?
Second definition here is the act of terrorizing or state of being terrorized, a mode of government by terror or intimidation.
Oh, yeah. So let me complete my argument and then see if I can get you back.
Sure.
His motive in his manifesto had nothing to do with trying to cause fear or change politics for the Jewish community. It was to inspire regular people to wake up and do something about Gaza.
To me, that's still a political goal.
Yeah.
I still see that way. I mean,
what I ever liked about the definition absent the fear mechanic is because all wars are now terrorism. And so you can't distinguish between non-state actors trying to do a thing and state actors, right? Because operations, and this is something liberals said all throughout 2002, Operation Shock and Awe is literally terrorism by that definition. So how do we distinguish these two things between official state actors and non-official state actors, between modes of regime change for security purposes, supposedly, and attacking civilians because of your political ambitions? Are these just obviously comes down to war games.
And you know, the value of which can be debated for sure. But I would say that I think there is government terrorism. I do think that there is state terrorism. I think the key thing here is the civilian population being the target, right? Yeah. Innocent civilians being the target of any, you know, violence in order to enact some sort of political goal does seem to be the operative piece.
Right. And so if that's the goal, fine. All right. Maybe he is a terrorist. I'm open to that. Yeah. So is he Islamist though?
I turn to you.
No, I believe you.
I turn to you.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking out loud. I hadn't actually thought about that before. I was like, isn't terrorism? Well, especially because it always associated me with non-state actors.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, but I'm totally, I thought the word's utility was in its difference between war, right? Because war was seen as either just or unjust, but terrorism was its own category that was separate. But
right. Which is, I think, civilian targeting. I mean, if two states are warring against each other, or a state is warring against an insurgent faction that is very deliberately combatant, then that is a war, right?
All right, so Islamism, let's keep going.
Yeah.
Young men, the young man who murdered two Israeli embassy staffers, 30-year-old Yaron Lishinsky and 26-year-old Sarah Milgram, is a perfect example of the problem. He shouts free Palestine not because he is from there or understands the place, but because as a young brown man, he identifies with the oppression, and he has been conditioned to do that. We know the shooter is a far left activist caught on camera shouting Free Palestine. And as he was arrested, he kept chanting the slogan and said, I did it for Gaza. So why the F are all these people on the left saying, if true? And if that's who he is, and if he's not an IDF plant, and you don't want any of the blame for what just happened on you?
Are we doing an incel thing here? Is that what that is? Like, how's, he's like a confused young man who did this, like adolescence?
I mean, he's 31, right?
No, yeah. Well, Adolescence is a movie.
Oh.
It was a British movie about a young man in the UK that, and I haven't actually seen it. I've just heard a lot about it. I'm not going to subject myself to this, but where he gets into the incel culture and then he goes and stabs some girl.
Got it.
It's like left-wing fear porn. Right?
Sure.
I don't know if we know any of that stuff about this guy, right? Obviously, I think he's confused. Obviously, I think he's strategically dumb. Obviously, and many other things. I've made all these points up front. So I agree with him to that degree. I don't think he really understood what he was doing, or if he did, he's an idiot. But what is this? What was that section about right there? It was like he's like signaling that this guy is a bad guy. I get that. But like, what are we contending with here? Right. And then he has to bridge that to you're somewhat responsible for this.
Right.
Right. And that's where I'm like, first you gotta make him Islamic, like an Islamic terrorism thing. And then you gotta like claim that he's, you know, he attached himself to left wing ideology and he's, because he's a purposeless young man. There's like, it's that fear thing that the culture has around like young men who are aimless. Right.
Sure.
And then he goes into, and it's your fault.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't actually really tend to disagree with the concern about young men who are aimless.
Yeah.
I do think that that creates a high degree of volatility, potentially. But to then say that it's anyone's fault other than the young aimless man, to me is a displacement of responsibility. Like, yeah, to a certain degree, yes, you can certainly be negatively impacted by the forces around you, culture, you know, lack of community, whatever that might be, upbringing. But like, to a certain extent, like to a large extent, particularly in the context of an act like this, the person committing the act, the individual, is responsible for the individual's actions, period.
Right.
Like, unless you were literally brainwashed into being like a Manchurian candidate.
But you were.
You own it yourself.
He was brainwashed.
He is described as what he is. He said what he said. Stop asking why people who understand what we're up against, like Douglas Murray, cautioned Joe Rogan against his comic buddies bashing Israel for sport and to develop a following.
See, that's how they go. That's how they do it. They slip it in like that. They're like, it's really about the big figures, and it tears into...
Which,
talking about Paul Wolfowitz is why this happened. Come on.
Yeah, that really pulls the curtain back on the motive of this kind of piece, which is just another hit piece against independent media, against people that have unpopular opinions, or I should say really contrarian opinions to the established narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's this. And I just saw a lot of that with this story, and it's absolutely tragic. Standing on the dead bodies of two kids in order to make your political point is really just shitty.
Yeah.
I actually didn't want to talk about it because it feels like there's no win in the story. But, you know, I see this stuff and I'm like, it makes me so upset. It feels, and this is the thing too, is I'm so used to it. Like, ugh, the gun debate.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how can't these people see, you know, that what they're doing is the exact same thing that they do in the gun debate, which is, someone used a gun in a way that was inappropriate, therefore we should take away guns from all the people who have appropriately used guns and can use guns, right, and should use guns.
I mean, just speaking to the incentives of that kind of argument, like you made the point earlier, unfortunately it works.
Yeah.
Right? It does. I mean, they're able to inspire a lot of political motivation, mm-hmm, by spinning these very... heartfelt. I mean, you can feel the emotion pouring off of Chris Cuomo here. He's fired up about this. I mean, yeah. That's going to communicate to people who are open to this communication, and it's going to pull them in the direction of having this very unnuanced binary view of this issue or of any issue where they're trying to use this sort of, you know, tactic. Mm-hmm. And that's really the concerning thing. And I mean, you're kind of right. There's no win here, except for perhaps just dissecting this tactic.
Yeah.
Like, this is media manipulation. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the use of fear to control your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if just by talking about it and bringing it to some people's attention, we can inoculate against it just a little bit and keep people in the rational mind, in the rational frame, and not in the emotional frame, that to me is the win we can pull here.
100%. Dude, that's a good ending.
All right.
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks for watching, everybody. It's another episode of Human Reaction. We appreciate you very much. We will be back with you on Friday. If you would like to get involved in this conversation, drop us a comment below the video. Tell us we're dumb fucks like Dave Smith or whatever. And jump in the Discord. We have a lot of great conversation in there. We'd love to have you. Link is in the description below. For David Rand, I'm Joe Sheehan. See you next time.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.